over the days we've been touching into particular paramis, and there's a couple of paramis that I thought we haven't spoken to maybe so directly. Maybe you feel like there's still a few more. But they've kind of all been involved in the practice in many ways. And I just wanted to start off just kind of naming these two that I was thinking about quite a lot, and I think quite important. So in Pali, called Kanti and Aditana. And Kanti Parami, we could say, is the patience, the tolerance, the acceptance, the endurance, the forbearance of things, that quality of kind of slowing down and giving things time. And Aditana is this parami of determination, of resolution, of really kind of going into, going for something. And I find them very important. I think that they are qualities I wish to see more in the world. And because of that, within me, I want to see them more within me. And therefore, they're qualities that I try to cultivate in my practice. So kind of staying with something like a parami, like a beautiful quality, or just practice itself, you know, the cultivation, requires determination, you know, requires that kind of clarity of purpose. And it can take a lot from us. It can feel like it asks a lot from us to keep cultivating, you know, these sublime things, or just to show up and do our practice. You might notice that. And sometimes it's like, oh, again, really, you know. But it's important to remember, at some point, it really might be just one more time we need to kind of apply our attention, and there's some, you know, breakthrough. And oftentimes with these, you just don't know when it's going to happen. So it's really worth having that quality of determination that says, oh, just one more try, really wholehearted, go into it. Which reminds me of this Rumi poem that goes, "The breeze at dawn has secrets to tell you. Don't go back to sleep." Yeah. The breeze at dawn has secrets to tell you. Don't go back to sleep. Oh, no, I just roll over. Yeah. Maybe. And then the next line is, "You must ask for what you really want. What you really want. Don't go back to sleep." And then once we know that, then it's really important to have the patience, right? Not to rush this process, this unfolding, not to try and, you know, tear the petals of the flower open. So come on, open up, you know, allowing these things to blossom, to, you know, not trying to quicken the results, but also not fading away. That balance of patience and determination. And I think, you know, one of the things in our practice, speaking about this kind of deeply rooted, you just feel, you know, some of us are feeling, oh, those roots go really deep, getting them deepened all the way down feels like a long time that it takes. We have patience at times, we have determination at times, and, you know, sometimes some of these paramis, we'll just mix them up and make a nice cocktail. Patience, determination, or determined patience. So spin them in together. And in fact, you know, a lot of these paramis go together anyway. You may have kind of noticed that if you're paying attention to this as part of the, like, checking in with how our practice is going. Yeah, having that kind of gom sense at the end. So you might notice it's not just the parami we're cultivating that's more present. Like, other ones have come along as well. Yeah. So if you have this, you know, quality of developing care, I mean, it's like over these days we've developed a lot of care for each other, for our practice, the way that we've lived. It's been very kind of relatively low impact by human standards, you know, the way that we've lived our lives here, that kind of element of care. And when we live with care, there can be this quality fading away of remorse, yeah, and regret. I don't know if you ever get that emotion, you know, through the way that we live, you know, so, yeah. And that can disappear a little bit through being aligned with what we care about. And we get that on the retreat, but we could get that in our lives if we align ourselves that way. And with that fading away of remorse comes quite a boom in the energy at times. Yeah, feel like things open up, things move well. So energy comes from following sila, yeah, the virya, parami. Or maybe what we notice is actually the clarity, the discernment, and the wisdom starts to open up with that more clear. And we're not entangled up in, oh, I shouldn't have done that. Yeah, things open up in that way. The patient determination has actually been there specifically in a few of the practices with this sense, you know, I used that example from the Tibetan that in each moment, maybe we're a little bit tight, we're a little bit loose. Yeah, need a little bit more determination when we're a bit loose. Yeah, need a little bit more softening, opening, but more of that patience when we, yeah, when we're too tight. It's like finding that dance in the practice. I think it's such a helpful capacity that we have with our attention, with our way of being. So I just wanted to mention them. I might weave them back in a little bit, but I thought maybe we could just have a review of the paramis. And actually just to review them in exactly the same way as when we introduced them, which was, we just spent a minute, do you remember, on the first evening, we just spent a minute with each of them. And then they might have felt like unfamiliar visitors. And now we can see, oh yeah, I know you a little bit, yeah. Or we can just tune into it again, because they've all been around, but maybe it's nice just to do that as a way of something we can do on the last evening. So again, we'll just take a minute with each, so that will be about 10 minutes altogether. So we'll start with the dana parami, the generosity, the giving of oneself, giving what's precious, giving our attention. See how much you want to open to that, how much to allow it to find you. Change parami, you can see you might want to keep that in the flavor and bathe in the sila parami, the quality of care, respect, integrity, ethical, virtuous. And yeah, different taste, different flavor, different opening. Bring in the karma parami, the renunciation, the letting go, the release. Thank you. Making space. And then inviting in the panya parami, the clarity, discernment, wisdom. And then tuning into the virya parami, this energy, this effort, application of our being through our energy, diligence, vigor. Enthusiasm. And then releasing into the kanti parami of patience, tolerance. Acceptance. And the quality of satya, truthfulness, honesty. We recognize how it is right now with honesty. And the determination of Aditana, moving to the five of resolve, resolution, And we find ourselves with our friend Metta, Parami of goodwill. Kindness. Welcoming. Opening into upekkha, the final parami of equanimity, serenity of non-reactivity. Releasing contraction. Equally close. All things. So you may stay there or come back. So you may find, you know, it's enjoyable just to contemplate one or another. There might be some that feel like, oh, it's really good to aim towards that, you know, bring my patient determination in that direction. Maybe there's one that feels still very kind of mysterious and unfamiliar, and we want to try and get more familiar with it over the days of our lives. Yeah. So I find that these are really helpful themes to have in mind in our daily lives, in our daily practice, but in our lives in general. So what do we really want to see more of? As Rumi was saying, you know, ask for what you really want. Ask for what you really want. And it's not a bad thing to do that. Yeah. I think there is a place in our lives, in our world, in our time, for more of at least some of these paramis. And so if you do feel they could be helpful, one or more of these, you know, then do go for it. Yeah. They can be also really practically helpful. Like they keep us from the flood. Yeah, they keep us from dukkha when they're there, when they're alive, when they're getting more deeply rooted, when they're elevated, when they're radiated. They are really beneficial. I've used them in my practice. Others have used them in their practice as a way of countering the hindrances. Yeah, really helpful little tools that we can use. You know, it's like, ah, I've got a lot of this greediness going on, or something like this. Yeah. Really helpful. So think about what kind of parami would counter that. Yeah. What would be helpful there? Maybe, you know, the dana parami makes a lot of sense. The giving, yeah, or the nikama parami, the renunciation, the letting go of these things that I'm grasping after, Yeah, it can be really helpful. If we find there's a lot of aversion, many times people will speak about this, and you know, the common piece of advice is practice metta. And you know, mentioned this before when I've been sharing the metta practice, I really think it doesn't matter who you give that metta to. Like, you don't have to give it to the person that you're feeling aversive towards. Yeah. Like, oh, the struggle. And give it to yourself. Give it to anyone, right? In that moment, there will be more metta and less aversion. Yeah. The basic idea behind paramis and other things is they replace the mind state that you're in to some degree. Yeah. Like, you can't very easily be in two conflicting mind states at the same time. Yeah. It's difficult to have aversion and metta. Now, give me a minute. Send some aversion there, some metta there. Right. Even the best mind juggler, you know, will struggle. You know, you'll drop one once, otherwise, oh God, I sent metta to the aversive person again. Idiot. And, you know, as a practice in general, metta is such a good lubricant to the heart, you know, loosening those senses of indifference. And we can find it having remarkable effects. Yeah. And it has a boundless nature. It will start to kind of seep into areas that we thought it couldn't touch, you know, like the inner critic, or, you know, any areas where we didn't realize that we could bring our hearts, you know. And it will also transform into compassion or into appreciation as well. You know, when it contacts the painful, when it meets the beautiful, it becomes that quality that, again, you know, has this kind of boundless, undefinable nature. And the practice we were doing today, which for me is an upekkha practice, it's an equanimity practice, this releasing the contraction. All the various ways that Zohar was describing how that, you know, what gets contracted, the heart gets contracted, the attention gets contracted, the body energy gets contracted. All of those ways we can release that. Such a helpful practice. But essentially, all of the paramis fulfill the path, right? And this whole idea is like, try and pick up one parami at a time, really, and not contact any of the others, you know. And they just, oh, all stuck together. It's kind of, they lift together and they increase together. Something came up in one or two of the conversations that we had. We had these kind of one-to-one meetings, and a couple of things came up, and it got me to thinking about an idea that I have about bringing the paramis to life. That I just want to kind of share this, just because I think it's kind of a common idea that we might be having now, which is, you know, if anything in any way has gone well on this retreat, we might be thinking, I need to, you know, bring this into my daily life practice or into my daily life. And I think one obvious way that we sometimes think about this is like, I should have a mini retreat every day of my life, or, you know, on the weekends, I should just kind of replicate retreat into my life. And that's, you know, obviously the best thing that we can do, because it works here. Therefore, you know, I'll copy and paste that into my existence. And it will be very different if you choose to do that anyway. So something I've thought about more and more is that, are there ways that we can implant little moments of paramis into our daily life that fit and kind of fit with the rhythm of our life? I'm not going to give you my enormous thesis, but I do have one, but I'll save that for like another time. But I just want to share a little bit about ways of practicing in our life, for our life, according to our life, right? Which doesn't mean that we have to then, you know, separate ourselves away. As far as I can tell, what makes a meditation is that we lift up beautiful qualities into being. Yeah, that's what makes it, at least that's what makes it a good meditation. Right? For many people, what they think is a good meditation is that, you know, they put their mind on the object and it stayed there. And a bad meditation is the one where your mind wanders around all over the place, you know. But I think the good meditations are the one where you get closer to kind of parami-like qualities. So even if my mind is incredibly busy, but I'm able to increase the amount of patience that I have and tolerance of an incredibly busy mind, and I can then carry that patience and tolerance with me into my next activity, then I consider that a good meditation. I don't value it against like thoughts per second, which, you know, would then mean, oh, well, I've lost. There's nothing I can do because I have a busy mind and I came into the meditation with a busy mind or an irritated body or whatever it is, you know. But if I can meet that with whatever, let's say I'm going to meet it with metta, that's fantastic. And I just kept doing it and I kept doing it, kept planting that intention. Maybe I didn't feel any metta, but I kept bringing that intention. So that for me would be considered a success. Yeah, I think it's maybe a lower bar than other people would have. But it actually makes more sense to me for my life, for what I want to develop. And it actually, to me, it sounds more intelligent and kind. So that's how I choose to practice. But I'm aware that there are other ways we might measure things. What I find really helpful to do is if you can only spare a small amount of time, spend that time checking which hindrances are present in this body, heart, and mind. So part of this GOM, part of this getting familiar, is to ask ourselves, is there any greed or aversion active in this body, heart, and mind now? Is there any restlessness or dullness occurring in this body, heart, and mind now? Is there any lack of confidence that there's something I can do about this experience, that teachings and practices, paramis, can be brought to bear into this moment? There's kind of a doubt about that. And I was like, just review that. Yeah. Sometimes I even write it down. Like, yeah, I was greedy and I was restless. And then I'd like to say, I've got a little bit of time. Let's see if we can bring something more beautiful into being. Something that kind of makes sense. And follow your intuition. Yeah, whatever it is. If you haven't got the time, just noticing which hindrances are present can be a really helpful practice in and of itself. At least I'm aware of it. At least I'm aware of what's active going on here. Yeah. And that still supports the development of honesty. Yeah. That's satya parami, truthfulness. Ah, it's like this right now. But if we have got time for little antidotes, we can go into that. Because you're already getting pulled towards the flood, it's a good time to meet with some parami stuff. Yeah. So we spoke about a few of them already, you know, about greediness, aversiveness, and we can also speak about the patience and the determination with the energetics. Yeah, it's always something that we can do. It starts to change those qualities, high energy, some patience. And slowly, slowly, that starts to increase the confidence that we have, that there's always something that we can do that changes experience to some degree. And the hindrances do not only occur in meditation practice. Yeah? They occur outside of it. So it's really helpful just to be able to have the confidence in the moment that they're there. To say, there's something I can do about this. Something in this moment, the way that I relate, something that I can do that will start to shift that. And if you can't think of, you know, well, I can't think which parami is appropriate to do in relationship to which hindrance. Firstly, you could ask me anytime, day and night. I'll tell you what I think you should do. I always have an opinion. But any of them will work. Yeah, any of them are a good thing to cultivate, more or less. Yeah. Because they transform experience. They are transformers of experience. All of them. They develop, they change, They change who we feel ourselves to be. They change the world we feel that we're living in when they're present. They change the world that we live in when we express them. Yeah. How our world appears to us, how we are appearing in the world, is transformed by the paramis. Yeah. There's something quite interesting in the teachings, actually, about who we are. In fact, the Buddha almost never speaks about who we are. Yeah. There is no "who am I" question in these teachings. Yeah. And you might know that there is this kind of not self element in these teachings. Yeah. We haven't gone on about that at all here. Oftentimes because it feels that it gets picked up a little bit the wrong way around, and taken as a kind of a primary type of teaching. But when the Buddha does speak about how a person appears, rather than like who they are, it's about the activity that they do. Yeah. I think I mentioned briefly that the Four Noble Truths are views that we uphold that dependently arise nobility. Yeah. A bit of a weird thing to say. But the Buddha seems to point towards this at times. And he says, you know, at the time of the Buddha, he was living in India and they had a Brahmin caste. And the Brahmins were the priests who would do the services, and they would also, you know, run the rites and rituals and also organized a lot of the structure of society. They were the kind of the upper caste and the upper class people who had a lot of power and influence in the society. And so they were what are referred to as noble in that sense. Yeah. And what the Buddha would say is, you're not noble because of your birth, because it was by birth you were born into this caste system. You're noble because of what you do. And these renunciates who practice this dharma of non-harming, you know, of compassion, of wisdom, of the paramis, these are the noble ones because of what they do, not of how and where they were born. And it's quite interesting that the Buddha was a very radical being in terms of trying to change the views of his society, you know, and taking quite an antagonistic view towards the structures at the time, which were very embedded, you know, and that there's this, you know, conflictual view about what, who gets to, you know, call themselves noble in a society. But from the Buddhist perspective, it's very much what we do is how we're found. There's a practice, which is a lovely practice to do, called the daily remembrances. I'm not going to go into all of them, but the fifth one says, my actions are my only true belongings. My actions, my activity is the ground on which I stand. And we could go further and to say, you can't find me apart from the activity that I'm doing. Yeah. And we kind of recognize people. Alan Watts had this saying that he would say, we recognize people like a swirl in the river. You know, you go to the river and the river, there's got this kind of swirl in the river, but it's not made of anything. It's just this swirl that happens there because of, you know, whatever, the roots and the contours of the river shapes this way. And beings are like that, that we're like this activity that appears. And when you change that activity, you change yourself. And that's why this self, this not self teaching is saying, it's not some findable thing. Because if you change what you're doing, how are we going to find you? Bodies change, minds, thoughts change, feelings change, opinions change, tastes change, passions change, cultures change. But I stay the same. Everything changes but you. Yeah. No, we're all changing in that way. And that's why there was this emphasis on the two sorts of thinking that Zohar spoke about, these two baskets of thinking, you know, the greediness, the harmfulness, thinking, or the generosity, renunciation, kindness, thinking. Why? Because those two different routes are not just two different routes to different destinations. They're also different routes to who you become. And not only who you become, who everyone becomes. We all have this dependently arising nature, dependent on how we act. And the paramis are a different way of acting. You know, they're a different way of showing up. And our cultures and our societies are just made up of actors acting, activities. And if they change, if any of us change, we start to influence change. So these teachings are very radically purposeful. And the Buddha was aware of it, spoke about it in their time. But whether we think of this as kind of an individual awakening project, or we think of it as a kind of a global transformation project, it's up to you. Like, how we conceive of things is how we perceive of things. And you are free to conceive and perceive however you want to see it. But it's very true and very clear and very obvious. It works across numerous boundaries, across numerous paradigms. These teachings work. And they work even if they change the slightest thing. If doing your mindfulness, your paramis, your metta, whatever practice changes you in the slightest way, it works. If we can reduce our suffering by one molecule, yeah, whatever suffering is made out of, I can't remember what it's called, Dukanoid? Anyway, if you can reduce it by one molecule or one element or whatever you want to say it as, then you can go all the way, can't you? Because you can reduce it by another one and then by another one. It might take you a long time if you go one by one. After a while, they cascade, luckily, you know, go down in clumps. But some image of some game where everything's falling apart. But that sense, it can work, you know. And if we can change ourselves, we can help others to change, and others can help others to change. And the same thing that seems to be a vicious circle is actually a, you know, an elevating spiral, yeah, extending out. So it's really significant to ask ourselves, like Rumi asks this, what is it you really want? What is it you really want? Don't go back to sleep. What when I do it? Yeah. We can ask ourselves, what do I really want? Or we can ask ourselves, what kind of world do I want to live in? Yeah. And for me, I was saying that's a world with patience and determination. Yeah, a world with kindness. A world with tolerance. A world with truthfulness. A world that can release what destroys and encourage what builds. Yeah, builds community, builds peacefulness. Builds satisfaction. Yeah. And so we can make this happen. Yeah. And we know that this works. Yeah. We know that transforming ourselves is somewhat possible. And therefore transforming our societies is somewhat possible. If we choose to see it that way, envision it that way. And interestingly, some people have spoken about, you know, rebirth appearing in these teachings. What's rebirth doing in the teachings? Especially in relationship, if you've held the view, you know, that anatta is saying there is no self, then why is a no self getting reborn as another no self? Very weird formula. The rebirth stuff must be nailed upon later. But it turns out some people have this view that actually the rebirth stuff is the central point. It's the central point. Who are we getting reborn as moment to moment? Wonderful Thai abbot called Buddhadasa had this idea that it's not selves getting reborn in different lifetimes, but it's really selves getting reborn moment to moment. Yeah. If you're this whirling, swirling thing in the river, then you're getting reborn in each moment where the influences that push you, shape you, form you, reform you. Anyone who's done, you know, a practice, I like to do standing meditation. We haven't formally done it. I know some of you have been doing it. The wonderful thing about standing meditation, it was introduced to me as it's called the practice of no escape. And only people who love it gets to call it that. That's what the person said, the practice of no escape. And that feeling of no escape is that I really want to stop. But the question is, if you don't stop, and the body, heart, mind is saying, stop, for God's sake, you've had enough, stop it. He said, well, what if I don't decide to be defined by the limitations that my mind thinks is my limitations? What if I bring that determination into the next moment? Then who am I going to be? If I don't, you know, adhere to the definitions that I have of myself. Nathan, you can't do any more. Really? Maybe I can. And the interesting thing is when you do a practice like that, whether it's in stillness, reclining, standing, anything that kind of questions that level of endurance, that the kanti can also mean patience and endurance, and mixing that in with a sense of determination to bring something into being that hasn't otherwise been here, you really pop into something quite different. And that's an interesting rebirth. Yeah, something we're in an unfamiliar territory. And oftentimes what's opened up there are kind of paramis, are beautiful, sublime qualities, or a sense of being deeply rooted in a way that you found yourself, your place in the world. It's not a self in the narrow definition of it. So we have a world that is perhaps deeply troubled. Yeah. And maybe the world has always been deeply troubled. Certainly from the Buddha's time, the world is deeply troubled. Yeah. The wars, the famines, the cruelty, the slavery, all of those things. Yeah. And we still live in a world where terrible things are happening, things that really break our hearts and can bring us to a sense of despair. So there is a question of like, what is this practice for? Who is this practice for, that we practice for? Why do we practice? What do we want to do with these qualities? What are we determined for? What are we willing to be patient for? What are we wishing to see more of in our lives, in the world? I believe what these teachings suggest is that we can improve our state and we can improve this world to be a wonderful, peaceful, safe place for all beings. Yeah, if we are willing to work on those paramis, like the parami of sila, of virtuous conduct, of care, of respect, if we're willing to work on those qualities that bring us an inner sense of well-being, sufficient that we can enter the challenges of our circumstances. Yeah? That we can use the same practices that we've developed here to be the paramis in action in our hearts and what the whole world likely desires. Yeah. So that might sound quite lofty. And yet I think it's surprisingly something that we can step into, particularly if we take it on as a practice, with patience, with determination, with kanti, with aditana, together. A wonderful cocktail. Yeah, they really go well together, I think. You can add in others as well. I'm not stopping you at all. But thinking about it, many of the teachings where we also began in the opening evening speaking about the five precepts, the sila, the ethos of this retreat, the ethics of our behavior, the way we conduct ourselves. I wonder if they're also the outflow of retreat, of practice, is that we find ourselves more and more able to live in a non-harming attitude. That makes sense. The very things that bring us in, bring us a sense of clarity and wisdom, and what we understand is how to harm less, harm ourselves less, harm others less. And as that samadhi, that gathering in well-being deepens, we find that we don't need to harm others as much. We don't misconstrue where happiness comes from. Yeah, we understand there's more happiness in generosity than in greed. We understand that there's more happiness in metta than in aversion, yeah? In compassion than harmfulness. Like, probably no one's confused about that one. It's like very little fun in harmfulness. Lots in compassion. And it creates a better vibe for the society around you. So more and more it's come to my heart and mind that perhaps, and I wish to end on this point, perhaps the precepts are the way to bring sila into our lives more and more. Yeah. If you can't remember them, I'm going to go over them. But like, if you can already remember them, could you imagine a world that followed these five precepts? And these five precepts, they're not that hard. Yeah, not intentionally killing, not intentionally stealing. Not intentionally sexually misusing your sexual energy. Not intentionally using your speech to be divisive. Yeah. Not intentionally clouding your mind so that you're not able to kind of maintain the other four precepts. Yeah. Imagine a world that lived that way. Pretty nice. Pretty nice. And if that sounds appealing, then why don't we start it? Yeah. Just keep being an ethical being. Keep being a virtuous being. Keep being a caring being. Yeah. And when you find yourself not doing that, then you practice the paramis. So I worked on this. I have a little, text that we could use. Maybe at the end we'll send it out to you if anybody doesn't say that's rubbish. Okay, so there are five paramis. And the first one is to do with respecting life. Sorry, five precepts. Did I say paramis? Thanks for catching me. All right. So it's kind of combining the five precepts with the paramis, as you'll see, right? So maybe I'll just go through. So the first one would be today, because you've got to take it on each day at a time. So today, I choose not to diminish life. Today, I choose to honor what is freely offered. Today, I choose to abandon desires that lead to harm. Today, I choose honest, uniting speech. Today, I choose not to cloud my awareness. But when I thought about it, it was like we could incorporate the paramis in those moments where we feel the urge to do otherwise. Yeah. So if today I choose not to diminish life, but if the impulse to harm arises, I turn instead to metta, goodwill, and kanti, patience. I was quite inspired both by Zohar and also someone on the trekking retreat who, I'll give the example from the trekking retreat, so I already gave her example with the mosquito. There was a mosquito on this guy's forehead and we were talking and someone else came across and they started to like go to his forehead to knock the mosquito off, to do him a favor. And he replied, "Hey, let him eat." I just love the goodwill and the patience. It's like, they weren't going to kill it, but they were just, you know, let him eat. So the next one, today I choose to honor what is freely offered. Or we might say, I choose to not take what is not clearly given. Yeah. But honoring what is freely offered. And if grasping or envy arises, I turn instead to dana, generosity, and nikama, renunciation. They're really helpful to have something that we can do when they arise. It's like, I practice those. And slowly, slowly, the urge for the other I have will diminish. Today, I choose to abandon desires that lead to harm. That's sexual, sensual misconduct. Yeah. And if craving or exploitation arises, I turn instead to sila, care, virtue, integrity, and virya, the energy, the effort. Yeah. It can help us to tune into what's wholesome, what's helpful. And today I choose honest, uniting speech. What they often call not false, divisive, harsh, or idle talk. But if the impulse to deceive or divide arises, I turn instead to panya, discernment, clarity, and satya, truthfulness. Yeah. Just imagine what a world it would be if we were able to pull that off. Yeah. And today I choose not to cloud my awareness. If heedlessness calls, I turn instead to aditana, determination, and upekkha, serenity. Yeah. That non-reactive, equally close quality can feel into life. So let's close with a quiet moment of feeling into the possibility of the paramis, whichever one feels most beneficial, or one or two. Thank you for your presence and giving me a chance to express those ideas. So we'll take our usual half an hour movement and come back for the last practice of the day, because maybe not all of us will have the energy to come back. I just mentioned that tomorrow morning's wake up is the same time. Meditation starts at the same time, but it'll only be half an hour. And then Nasu will be explaining some things before breakfast to us from 7:15. So at the least, come at 7:15. If you want to have a longer meditation, come earlier. otherwise, we'll have a half hour practice in the hall before that essential information from Nasu at 7:15. So hopefully see you in the chanting.